This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Futuro.
From Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, anything for Selena. Dear listener, today we have something super, super special for you. It's an episode from our newest podcast, Anything for Selena. And this is a collaboration between Futuro Studios and WBUR in Boston. The podcast is a deep dive into Selena Quintanilla's lasting impact on Latino identity and American belonging, hosted by journalist Maria Garcia. And I'm going to hand things over to Maria right now.
If I was somehow asked to say only one thing about the place I'm from, it would be that it has this unforgettable smell when it rains. It's slightly floral, but mostly it's this very specific, cool, earthy desert aroma. And there's usually a calm, clear breeze, which carries these concentrated little pockets of fragrance.
Oh my God, there it is.
The smell comes from the creosote bush, a resilient plant that thrives only in this particularly arid landscape. Especially after a thunderstorm, the creosote bush releases a bunch of these oil compounds into the air, stuff found in citrus, rosemary, pines, and it just smells like the earth exhales. Creosote can live for thousands or tens of thousands of years. It's one of the oldest living things on the planet. And here, this ancient brush grows at the foot of the Franklin Mountains and the valley they nestle below. Cutting through the desert valley is the Rio Grande, dividing two cities and two countries. El Paso, Texas, to the north, and Ciudad Juarez in Mexico to the south. This story, my story, long before I became a journalist and moved to the East Coast, begins here.
Well, I remember seeing El Paso from the hill where Mama Nena lived.
This is my brother, Jesse. Well, actually, his name is Jesus Elias, but he goes by Jesse. He was 5 when I was born in Ciudad Juarez, just a few miles from the border. One of his very first memories is looking across the border to the U.S.
We could see UTEP, we could see the buildings, the highway, we could see the other side.
My parents could see the other side too. In Mexico, we lived in a vecindad, these tenement studio apartments all connected through the same courtyard. Something like 10 families shared one bathroom outside. My dad, like a lot of folks, already crossed the border practically every day to odd jobs in El Paso, like at an egg factory. He and my mom had to quit school by the age of 13 to help their families. The other side of the border looked safer, quieter, the kind of place that could afford my brother and I the life our parents couldn't have. When I was 3, my parents took all the money they saved and moved us across the border to a small, refurbished trailer in the most rural, undeveloped outskirts of El Paso County. The land was dry and flat, untouched.
And I remember getting off the car and seeing those huge tumbleweeds. And under there, usually there's snake pits, you know, the snakes. And when we first moved out here, there was always, you know, there was always snakes coming out.
One of my earliest memories ever is the smell of creosote bush here.
We were ecstatic as a family. You know, we loved the trailer. Nos sentíamos soñados, basically.
We still went to Juarez every weekend. There was always a cousin's birthday party or a baby shower or an anniversary in Mexico. We made home videos at these big family parties, a bunch of kids speaking Spanglish and staying up way late. I remember Juarez always being loud, like fun loud. We danced into the early morning hours at either of my grandmother's houses, a brood of cousins eating street tacos glistening in the dark amber of the Mexican street lamps. This was my early life. Mexico on the weekend, the States during the week. Soon I started school. On the first day of first grade, my teacher called me Mary. My actual name is Maria Elena, a name passed down from my grandmother. My mom says no one ever asked her if changing my name from Maria Elena to Mary was okay. She just kind of found out in an open house.
Pues sí, pues fui al open house.
When my teacher started talking about Mary,
me dice, la maestra, usted es la mamá de Mary.
And she was like, who's that?
Dije, ¿cuál Mary? Mary. Oh.
It didn't really even occur to my mom to object. We were new. She didn't speak English. We were undocumented. So she was like, okay, I guess they'll call her Mary.
Pensé por adentro, ya le pusieron Mary a mi hija. Pues bueno, está bien.
My name, something I didn't really think about much before, soon became a source of ridicule. Whenever a substitute teacher said my real name, Maria, kids laughed. Some of them would even say, ew, a Mexican name. I remember what it felt like as shame took form inside of me. In the third grade, a classmate found some paperwork in the school office that said I was born in Juarez. He confronted me like I was hoarding a shameful secret. He told me he'd found me out, who I really was, that I was from Juarez. I panicked. I said there must have been a mistake. The kid who confronted me, he was white, the son of a wealthy farmer who employed seasonal Mexican workers. Kids like him were at the top of the elementary school hierarchy, favored by teachers, popular, often cruel. At the bottom were the kids of the Mexican farm workers employed by this boy's dad. My school was predominantly Latino, but there was a pecking order that rewarded kids who were the most assimilated. These moments of shame, of lying, they feel like some of the oldest wounds in me. But I thought I needed to be Mary. Mary wasn't born in Mexico. She didn't listen to Spanish music. She listened to TLC and Brandy and Boys to Men. She spoke English perfectly. She was American. And here's the thing. I became Mary, or at least partially did. I became more articulate in English because of school. I started fumbling my Spanish. Kids in Mexico called me a bocha, a Mexican-American who debased the Spanish language with their crass, working-class Spanglish. So I was increasingly feeling out of place in Mexico, too, in subtle but painful ways. And I felt a rejection, a stigma in both countries. I was always toggling between these two places, Mary and Maria, Spanish at home, English in the world. These two realities never came together. That was just life. I grew up believing that dividing yourself in two was completely normal, that I had to switch depending on what side of the border I was in. To 7, 8-year-old me, my entire life up until that point had been defined by the border. And this line of separation between Mexico and the U.S., between Mary and Maria, it wasn't just on a map. It felt like the border divided me from the inside, too. And then something changed my life. I saw a completely new way of being. I discovered Selena.
De costa a costa, de frontera a frontera, conquistando el mercado en toda la Unión Americana y la República Mexicana. Con ustedes, desde la ciudad de Corpus Christi, Selena y los Dinos.
I know I had heard her music before and been vaguely aware of her, but I specifically remember the first time I really saw Selena on TV. I must have been about 7. She had this cascade of black hair, red lips, brown skin. Como la flor, tanto amor. She sang like she felt every single word of her songs, like the music was emanating from her body. People just loved her. Mm-hmm. I loved her. She usually wore these skin-tight pants or a miniskirt with an embellished bra or bustier, sometimes peeking out from a leather jacket or see-through blouse. There were a lot of rhinestones and hoop earrings.
Otro éxito de Selena. You got it. Take it away. Eso.
And her dance moves. She'd do these elaborate twirls and sway her hips so rhythmically. She shimmied her shoulders like my cousins in Mexico. Other times she'd like bust out the Roger Rabbit or even the moonwalk. She sang bouncy Mexican cumbias like the ones I danced in Juarez on the weekends, but hers had a modern synthesizer sound to them. But then she would switch it up and sing these traditional Mexican mariachi songs that my parents loved. ¿Qué creías que te iba a perdonar? Que me iba a olvidar del daño que me hiciste? And then bam, she'd sing a song in English that sounded like something I would hear on my top 40 station with R&B influences. You're always on my mind. She was this force on stage, and off stage, she was always joking and being silly. She never seemed to take herself too seriously. I remember someone asking her what she'd do if she wasn't a famous singer, and she was like, I don't know, work at a fast food joint.
¿Qué piensas tú que estuvieras haciendo ahorita?
No sé, I'm trabajando en Whataburger.
To 7-year-old me in 1993, it felt nothing short of revolutionary to see a Mexican-American woman with working-class roots take pride in who she was and have the world love her for it. When I discovered her, Selena was in her early 20s and already a total star. She'd been singing since she was 9, touring Texas cities. I remember seeing her on TV winning at the Tejano Music Awards.
Woo! This is so cool. I'd like to thank every one of you who have supported Selena Zenas for many, many years. It's been such a long time since we've been in the music business.
I would see her in commercials on Texas TV stations.
Can't beat it, the rhythm, the one that you get from Coca-Cola Classic. It's that beat that's coming your way.
I remember people constantly talking about how she would be a mainstream crossover star once she finished recording an English album she was working on. But honestly, this wasn't the most impressive thing to me. What completely blew my mind was that she had crossed over into Mexico. The Mexico where kids made fun of me for not speaking Spanish perfectly, for not being the type of Mexican that people thought I should be. My home country that sometimes felt like it was slipping away from me. But here was Selena, queen of all pochas. And Mexico loved her.
Definitivamente México te ha abierto las puertas, Selena, porque no solamente Monterrey, sino también en toda la República Mexicana hemos visto.
When I would mess up my Spanish, I felt this pang of humiliation and panic. But Selena was messing up Spanish all the time, and she did it with joy.
Hola, ¿qué tal, amigos? Yo soy Selena y quiero invitarlos para que vean el show de Padrísimo cada domingo. No se lo pierdan. That's rock.
When she sang, her Spanish sounded just fine, but she didn't learn to speak it until she was an older teenager. Here was Selena, saying stuff wrong, translating out loud, struggling for words in Spanish, and sometimes English, just like me.
It's just like a cute name, like, hi, Buffy, what are you doing, Buffy? You know, like un cariño, like, ¿cómo se dice cariño? Like,
cariño, no such translation.
Like when, you know, you sweet talk, not sweet talk.
Selena switched between Spanish and English, Mexican and American in the public eye. And there were no cruel jokes, no shame in her accent, just adoration. She'd declare herself a proud Mexican.
Y me encanta porque así voy a aprender. Y esto me siento muy orgullosa de ser mexicana.
To me, it was as if she told Mexico, I don't sound like you. But this heritage is mine to claim too.
Yo no tuve la oportunidad de aprender mi español cuando yo estaba muy chica, pero ahora es el tiempo. Nunca es tarde para acercar de sus raíces.
It's never too late to get close to your roots, she'd say. Her identity as a Mexican American wasn't some novel detail people would find out about her. No, it was central to her presentation as an artist and as a person. She was explicitly Mexican-American. And just the way she looked really made an impression on me. Growing up on Univision and Mexican programming, all I mostly saw on television were these Mexicans with fair skin and often with blonde hair and light-colored eyes. I remember watching Selena on Mexican shows and thinking, she looks more Mexican than the host. And most people in Mexico probably thought the same thing too.
Dos mujeres, un camino.
Shout out to you if you recognize this telenovela open from your childhood. Selena made cameos as herself on this hugely popular Mexican show, her halting Spanish contrasting the heavily enunciated sound of mostly white Mexicans around her.
O sea que tú naciste en Estados Unidos?
Sí, soy de Corpus Christi.
Oye, ¿ya conociste a los de Bronco?
No, es la primera vez que lo voy a ver en vivo.
Oye, pero pues te encanta Ramiro, ¿verdad?
Siempre es tan directa.
She was just magnetic, different. And by 1994, when I was 9, it seemed like she was on top of the world.
The Grammy goes to Live, Selena.
Selena won a Grammy Award for Best Mexican-American Album for a live record of her music. That night, she wore this beautiful white gown with her black hair and an elaborate updo.
I also like to thank my band, Los Dinos, my father, Abraham, my brother, who's a producer of my music, and also my sister. Thank you for all the support. And I also like to thank all of you in my Latin family. Thank you for having faith in me. I love you. Thank you.
She was an international star, filling major stages in Mexico and other parts of Latin America. After a performance in New York City, the New York Times called her the undisputed queen of the fastest-growing genre in the country.
Well, it's like a dream come true. I mean, there's been a lot of hard work that we put into it, but you know what? When you get hard work, you get success, and we put a lot of years.
I couldn't believe someone like me was making it. One of ours. Those of us in the middle who felt like we weren't enough. Enough to be fully Mexican or fully American. But Selena was enough in both places. And that meant that maybe I could be enough. Coming up, we go to March 31st, 1995.
Star faded away today. Tejano music queen Selena has been gunned down in Corpus Christi.
The day that changed my life and the country forever.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo, modern management made simple. Climate change affects everyone, but it doesn't affect everyone equally. Immigrants often bear a unique burden due to climate change, but they're also leading the way with impactful solutions. Feet in Two Worlds, the news outlet and journalism training organization for immigrant voices, presents Home Interrupted. From flooded basement apartments in New York City to indigenous Maya farming practices in Nebraska, Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted brings you deeply reported original stories from across the United States. Episodes drop each week starting April 2nd. Find Feet in Two Worlds, Home Interrupted wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, we're back. We've been listening to Anything for Selena. It's a collaboration between WBUR and Futuro Studios, hosted by journalist Maria Garcia. And Maria is going to pick up the story now.
I don't remember if I went to school on March 31st, 1995. The day feels like a patchwork of images etched in my memory. It's hard to remember the order of things. I just see these vignettes, these split-second moments, and I remember this pit in my stomach.
Again, recapping our top story, Tejano recording star and South Texan Selena Quintanilla was shot and killed in Corpus Christi today. The person who apparently
I was at home was in the trailer, seeing my mom glued to the TV.
Would have been 24 in just 2 weeks.
Tears rolling down her rosy cheeks. I'd never seen her cry for someone who wasn't our family. And initially, I felt frozen.
A star faded away today. Tejano music queen Selena has been gunned down in Corpus Christi.
Family members in Mexico and the States called us, crying, in shock, asking if we were watching the news on TV.
Corpus Christi police converged on this motel around 11:30 this morning and quickly surrounded a red pickup truck. Inside, the woman suspected of shooting to death, Tejano music star Selena Quintanilla Perez.
Details poured in. Selena had been shot by the president of her fan club. Her name was Yolanda Saldivar. I remember seeing her face on the news and feeling my body fill up with a novel kind of rage.
The suspect in the shooting has been holding police at bay for hours, sitting in a pickup truck in the parking lot and holding a gun to her head.
When my dad came home from work that Friday, we watched the TV together. It got dark. I wept. My mom held me.
The standoff ended after 10 hours of very intense negotiations. The suspect, Yolanda Salivar, came out of the truck. The police officers used the door.
I just broke out in tears and I couldn't believe it, and I still can't believe it. I'm still in shock.
Suddenly, girls like me and people like my family were everywhere on TV, crying for her on the street, hearing ourselves on the news.
Fans who did not know her felt as if they did, and their pain reflected the loss of a good friend.
And, you know, it just hurts. She's a good person.
People said the scale of the mourning felt like the Kennedy assassination. And to me, it felt seismic. We didn't care if others understood our grief. We understood it. We knew Selena mattered.
Selena wanted to become a household name, and earlier this year, in a most tragic incident, she got her wish. Selena died.
We played her music loud. We cried for her loud. We were finally, fully ourselves out loud. I couldn't articulate this at that time. I hadn't intellectualized it. But I felt it. This shift inside of me. An urgency to stop hiding, to stop succumbing to shame, to stop dividing myself in two. Selena was proud of her heritage. She didn't hide who she was. How could I? Since, Selena has stayed with me. She's been this constant, almost mythic-like source of inspiration and resilience in my own life. I played her music after many hard days as a reporter along the border in my 20s. I wore a t-shirt with her face on it when I needed some confidence at the fancy East Coast graduate school I went to. I watch her old concerts if I feel out of place in Boston, where I'm based out of now. My love for Selena has informed even my current line of work as an arts and culture editor and critic. Because I first experienced the power of art and music and symbolism through her. Selena is this way home, this path to my roots. This cornerstone that I come back to when I need to feel grounded, when I need to remember who I am. A quarter century later, Selena's everywhere. Her iconography is ubiquitous. She's on candles and t-shirts and murals. Kim Kardashian dressed up as Selena for Halloween. Beyoncé credits Selena as an early example of stardom that inspired her. There's a ton of social media accounts dedicated to finding rare archive videos of her and making memes about her. Her clothing is at the Smithsonian. She's also become a loaded symbol, sometimes used for political or social causes. She means so many things to so many people.
Selena Gelestinos was the soundtrack of our lives.
Selena was the first form of representation for me as a Chicana.
There was a lot of pride that people took in Selena and in her music.
Whether you're Boricua or you're from the EFE or you're from the United States, her music permeates everywhere.
She was an icon that represented hope, like, you know, we can all do it because Selena did.
And we can pull something from her experience, from her life story, from her music.
This podcast, it's not really about Selena's story. I mean, yes, it is. But really, I'm trying to understand why her impact feels as far-reaching today as it did a quarter of a century ago. I want to know what mourning, remembering, celebrating Selena means. And after many, many months of immersing myself in her, I've come to realize Selena is like this vessel to understand so many things about race, class, body politics, and finding our place in this country. I wrote this podcast in El Paso because this border made me exist in an in-between that drew me to Selena in the first place. I spent months in quarantine thinking about Selena and me here, often after the rain. I don't know where this journey will take me, where I'll land, but I know where I start. And I start here. I start at the border. I start at the place that made me. I start from looking at the world as a fronteriza. I'm Maria Garcia, and this is Anything for Selena, a podcast about belonging from WBUR and Futuro Studios. I have to be honest with you. I was scared at the beginning of this journey. When I got the green light for this project, it was under one condition, that I secure something from Selena's family, not just an interview, but something else that at that time seemed kind of impossible to get. And I knew that to really understand Selena, not as this big icon, but as a real person, I had to go to her father. As a Selena fan all my life, I had complicated feelings about her dad. I'd seen him in the Selena movie, portrayed as a controlling, shouting, possessive father.
You listen to me. You all listen to me. If you follow that man, I will disband the group. There will be no more Selena y los Dinos. Do you understand me? Do you all understand me? It's over.
So if I wanted to make this podcast, I had to go to Abraham Quintanilla, notoriously known for guarding Selena's legacy with an iron fist, and ask him for something big.
Oh man, Mr. Quintanilla, I've been dreaming of this moment for a very long time.
Well, we're here.
That's next time on Anything for Selena.
Anything for Selena is a co-production of WBUR and Futuro Studios. The production team includes Kristen Torres, Antonia Cerejido, and Juan Diego Ramirez. The executive editors are Marlon Bishop and Ben Brock Johnson. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Julieta Martinelli, Alisa Escarce, Chiri Montalvo, Alejandra Salazar, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., and Julia Rocha, with help from Marta Martinez and Raul Perez. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, and Leah Shaw, with help from Alicia Baitu. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. It's going to be a great one. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, look for us on all of your social media. Ahí los veo. Hasta la próxima. Chao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by Carnegie Corporation, promoting the advancement and diffusion of knowledge and understanding. The Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org. And the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
Stand by. We have a kitchen situation going on here. Somebody just making a meal like normal people, but all right, we're going to continue in 3, 2, 1. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. In the days before President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration, we hear from young Latino and Latina activists from across the country about the promises they want Biden to keep. That's next time on Latino USA.